This excerpt comes from Facing History in Ourselves, Holocaust and Human Behavior.
The year was 2081, and everyone was finally equal. They were not only equal before God and the law, they were equal in every possible way. Nobody was smarter than anybody else. Nobody was better looking than anybody else. Nobody was stronger or quicker than anybody else. All this equality was due to the 211th, 212th, and the 213th Amendments to the Constitution, and to the unceasing vigilance of agents of the United States Handicapper General. Some things about living still weren't quite right, though. April, for instance, still drove people crazy by not being springtime. And it was in that clammy month that the HG men took George and Hazel Bergeron's 14-year-old son, Harrison, away. It was tragic, all right, but George and Hazel couldn't think about it very hard. Hazel had a perfectly average intelligence, which meant she couldn't think about anything except in short bursts. And George, while his intelligence was way above normal, had a little mental handicap radio in his ear. He was required by law to wear it at all times. It was tuned to a government transmitter. Every 20 seconds or so, the transmitter would send out some sharp noise to keep people like George from taking unfair advantage of their brains. George and Hazel were watching television. There were tears on Hazel's cheeks, but she'd forgotten for the moment what they were about. On the television screen were ballerinas. A buzzer sounded in George's head. His thoughts fled in panic, like bandits from a burglar alarm.
That was a real pretty dance, that dance they just did.
Huh?
That dance. It was nice.
Yep.
He tried to think a little about the ballerinas. They weren't really very good. No better than anybody else would have been, anyway. They were burdened with sash weights and bags of birdshot, and their faces were masked so that no one, seeing a free and graceful gesture or pretty face, would feel like something the cat drug in. George was toying with the vague notion that maybe dancers shouldn't be handicapped. But he didn't get very far before another noise in his ear radio scattered his thoughts. George winced. So did two out of the eight ballerinas.
What was that sound?
Sounded like somebody hitting a milk bottle with a ball-peen hammer.
I think it would be real interesting, hearing all the different sounds, all the things they think up. Only if I was Handicapper General, you know what I'd do? If I was Diana Moon Glampers, I'd have chimes on Sunday. Just chimes. Kind of in honor of religion.
I could think if it was just chimes.
Well, maybe I'd make them real loud. I think I'd make a good Handicapper General.
Good as anybody else.
Who knows better than I do what normal is?
Right.
George began to think glimmeringly about his abnormal son, Harrison, who is now in jail. But a 21-gun salute in his head stopped that.
Boy, that was a doozy, wasn't it?
It was such a doozy that George was white and trembling, and tears stood on the rims of his red eyes. Two of the eight ballerinas had collapsed to the studio floor and were holding their temples.
All of a sudden, you look so tired. Why don't you stretch out on the sofa so as you can rest your handicap bag on the pillows, honey bunch? Go on and rest your bag for a while. I don't care if you're not equal to me for a while.
She was referring to the 47 pounds of birdshot in a canvas bag that was padlocked around George's neck.
I don't mind it. I don't notice it anymore. It's just part of me.
You've been so tired lately. Kind of wore out. If there was just some way we could make a little hole in the bottom of the bag and just take out a few of them lead balls. Just a few.
2 years in prison and $200 fine for every ball I took out. I don't call that a bargain.
If you could just take a few out when you come home from work. I mean, you don't compete with anybody around here. You just sit around.
If I tried to get away with it, then other people'd get away with it, and pretty soon we'd be right back to the Dark Ages again with everybody competing against everybody else. You wouldn't like that, would you?
I'd hate it.
There you are. The minute people start cheating on laws, what do you think happens to society?
Reckon it all fall apart.
What would?
Society. Wasn't that what you just said?
Who knows?
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program. Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this can you read this?
The television announcer handed the script of his bulletin to one of the ballerinas.
That's all right. He tried. That's the big thing. He tried to do the best he could with what God gave him. He should get a nice raise for trying so hard.
The ballerina must have been extraordinarily beautiful, because the mask she wore was hideous. And it was easy to see that she was the strongest and most graceful of all the dancers, for her handicap bags were as big as those worn by 200-pound men. She had to apologize at once for her voice, which was a very unfair voice for a woman to use. Her voice was a warm, luminous, timeless melody.
Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me. Harrison Bergeron, age 14, has escaped from jail where he was held on suspicion of plotting to overthrow the government. He is a genius and an athlete, is under-handicapped, and should be regarded as extremely dangerous.
Harrison's picture flashed on the television screen. He was exactly 7 feet tall. The rest of Harrison's appearance was Halloween and hardware. Nobody had ever borne heavier handicaps. He had outgrown hindrances faster than the HG men could think them up. Instead of a little ear radio for a mental handicap, he wore a tremendous pair of earphones and spectacles with thick wavy lenses. The spectacles were intended to make him not only half-blind, but to give him wanging headaches besides. Scrap metal was hung all over him. Ordinarily, there was a certain symmetry, a military neatness to the handicaps issued to strong people, but Harrison looked like a walking junkyard. In the race of life, Harrison carried 300 pounds. And to offset his good looks, the HG men required that at all times he wear a red rubber ball for a nose, keep his eyebrows shaved off, and cover his even white teeth with black caps at snaggletooth random.
If you see this boy, do not, I repeat, do not try to reason with him.
My God, that must be Harrison.
Clanking, clownish, and huge, Harrison stood in the center of the studio. The knob of the uprooted studio door was still in his hand. Ballerinas, technicians, musicians, and announcers cowered on their knees before him, expecting to die.
I am the Emperor! Do you hear? I am the Emperor! Everybody must do what I say at once! Even as I stand here, crippled, hobbled, sickened, I am a greater ruler than any man who ever lived! Now watch me become what I can become!
Harrison tore the straps of his handicap harness like wet tissue paper, straps guaranteed to support 5,000 pounds.
I shall now select my empress. Let the first woman who dares rise to her feet claim her mate and her throne.
A moment passed, and then a ballerina arose, swaying like a willow. Harrison plucked the mental handicap from her ear, snapped off her physical handicap with marvelous delicacy. Last of all, he removed her mask. She was blindingly beautiful.
Now, shall we show these people the meaning of the word dance? Music! Play your best, and I'll make you barons, and dukes, and earls!
In an explosion of joy and grace, Harrison and his empress began to dance. Not only were the laws of the land abandoned, but the laws of gravity as well. They leapt like deer on the moon. The studio ceiling was 30 feet high, but each leap brought the dancers nearer to it. It became their obvious intention to kiss the ceiling. They kissed it. And then, neutralizing gravity with love and pure will, they remained suspended in air inches below the ceiling, and they kissed each other for a long, long time. It was then that Diana Moon Glampers, the handicapper general, came into the studio with a double-barreled 10-gauge shotgun. She fired twice, and the Emperor and the Empress were dead before they hit the floor.
You've got 10 seconds to get all your handicaps back on.
Back in their living room, the Bergeron's television tube burned out.
You've been crying.
Yup.
What about?
I forget. Something real sad on television.
What was it?
It's all kind of mixed up in my mind.
Forget sad things.
I always do.
That's my girl.
Gee, I could tell that one was a doozy.
You could say that again.
Gee, I could tell that one was a doozy.
This excerpt comes from Facing History in Ourselves, Holocaust and Human Behavior. For more information on this resource and our organization, please visit our website, facinghistory.org, or find us on Facebook.